And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus, 107 in the afternoon on this Tuesday, November 26th. Temperatures outside, a balmy 80 degrees with a light southwest wind. Oh, wait, that's Phoenix.
Never mind. Hold on. That's Phoenix, not Fargo.
Yeah, nice. Oh, man. Temperatures in the mid-teens across much of the area, and we're not going to warm up a whole lot today. And we've got even colder weather coming our way as we head into the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday weekend. So, Bridget, are you all ready for Thanksgiving? You have everything prepped, ready to go?
Or? I'm sure, like many others, you're looking at the turkey going, is it time? Should I thaw you now? I listened to a podcast from a guy who's just a genius in marketing out of Ontario, and he talked about the origins of the Butterball Hotline. Oh. And when it first started, it was three home economists with a three-ring binder with just a few bits of information in it. And this was in the 80s. And they expected that three people could handle it. They had 11,000 phone calls in the first run.
How many people do you think actually, did they say how many people actually use that the day of?
Oh, it's in the hundreds of thousands of people. And they said some of the most memorable ones are the gentleman who called and said, could he throw the wrapped turkey in the bathtub with his kids to get it to thaw a little faster? the newlywed in her bathroom whispering in the phone because she was afraid she'd messed up and her mother-in-law was there. It's just a myriad of things. I remember a story that they told also about someone wanted to thaw their turkey faster and it was a sunny day. So they put it on the roof of the house because they were going to cook it that night at supper time. They put it on the roof. But the snowbank was high enough that the neighbor's dog got up there. So it's like Christmas story. It's like the Bumpus dogs got it and drug away the turkey.
Oh,
so
man.
Those are all do nots for turkey preparation. There are some home economists out there right now cringing that I even mentioned.
Right. Them. Oh, that's hilarious. They could probably write a book on some of the
questions. They did. of the questions okay. they've gotten. Yes.
That'd be good comedy for sure. Uh-huh. Well, we've got some pretty cold weather heading our way as we head into Thanksgiving. And as I said, temperatures out there right now in the mid-teens across the area. And we're not going to move much, up to about 19 if we're lucky. And then at least winds will be light today out of the northwest. Tonight, clouds sticking up. We'll see some light snow come into the area after midnight tonight, with lows around 15 with light north winds. And for Wednesday, your morning commute could be a little bit slippery. We're not looking for a lot of snow, a half inch or less. But again, kind of like we had the other morning where we had a half, 7/10 of an inch of snow. That did kind of grease up the roadways for the morning commute. So you might want to keep that in mind for your Wednesday morning commute with highs close to 20. And then it turns windy and cold for Thanksgiving. Maybe a few flurries around with highs in the mid-teens, and then we're between 10 and 15 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with windy conditions. We'll have wind chills at times approaching 20 below, so make sure that winter weather survival kit is packed in the vehicle if you're doing any traveling. Thankfully, no big snow systems heading our way as we head into Thanksgiving. Now, early next week, there's going to be a ridge of high pressure, a warm ridge out to the west that's going to try and build in. But we're going to see these little clipper systems ride over that ridge and dive into the Great Lakes. As they do, we will see quite a few chances, it looks like, for light snow next week as that warm air tries to push in but just can't quite make it. But at least we should rise back up into the 20s for next week, even though it'll carry with it a few chances for snow as we head into next week. And we want to remind everybody, tomorrow on the Jay Thomas Show, we will have our LRC Winter Weather Outlook. We will have Gary Lezak, who founded the LRC. He will be joining us, and we'll be going over what this upcoming winter will look like.
Remember, there are some agronomists out there that refer to it as the likely really close weather forecast.
Yes.
So you're going to show if it's even better or not.
Well, and Gary will go over like of how it works for anybody that's joining us that is new. You know, how each year is different. This year, I think last year we had a 43-day cycle. The cycle length this year has not been set yet. We're seeing signs that might be happening very soon. It could be close to that 60-day cycle, which is one of the longer ones. But once we get that cycle length set, we can time out these storms, the cold snaps, the warmer weather when it pushes in, and how it'll affect our upcoming winter. We might dive in a little bit to spring, but I think we're going to hold this mainly to winter as we'll have our spring outlook coming up in March.
I got 3 months of travel ahead of me. Four, actually. So I just need to know those things.
Well, you can rest assured.
They'll happen when I'm there.
Typically.
Or on my way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's going to be quite a few storms that missed us in the first cycle to our south. So if you're traveling south, that will affect areas of the central plains, but not us. So, again, should be an interesting winter. It should not be as boring. I say boring. Most people say last winter was great. But this winter does not look, it doesn't look to be as boring as it was last winter.
Well, I don't know if you want
to call it boring. And again, boring is sometimes good.
Now, I will say I've seen a lot of folks getting ready for ice fishing. They've been getting their gear and they're planning for it. I think our tourism industry would be very happy to see that.
I think we'll have plenty of ice building weather here. For sure.
Good ice. There's now, a difference.
I do believe we are going to see a little stretch of warmer weather coming in December, maybe mid-month, with temperatures probably bouncing back into the 30s to maybe 40. If we're using, you know, according to the LRC cycle, we'll briefly warm up and then bam, we'll cool back down again. But yeah, quite a bit of ice-making weather going on already. I thought I saw, and I hope this was a picture from last year, somebody had a shanty already put up on the ice. Like, the ice can't be more than a few inches thick in the coldest areas.
Well, okay. So, yes, probably. Is there one up yet? I'm going to guess it's maybe a pop-up.
It was a pop-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if it can support you walking, it probably can support the pop-up. That's on them. I'm pretty sure Greg Gullickson with Game and Fish would have other ideas for
you. It is not safe to go. Yeah. There's no ice that's thick enough to be out on yet.
No. In fact, there was a great graphic the other day. I should have saved it. It talked about how many inches you need for certain items out there. And there was an incident in the Bakken a few years ago where a trucker got lost and wanted to turn around. So he thought he was just going to turn around this big empty parking lot.
Oh, no.
And it was a slough. And he did not have the 3 feet of ice that was required for a full tanker truck and broke through and lost that truck in the slough.
Was he okay? Did he make it out?
I think he did.
That's
but
good.
Wow. He might have felt a bit sheepish about the situation.
I bet.
Yeah, it happens. So, you know, we're going to teach people to do better things. And one of the ways we're going to do that is Bismarck State College, for the third year, is going to offer its custom application program. So if you're a farmer, you can apply your own fertilizer and pesticides. But oftentimes you find you have the need for someone who's a custom applicator. Well, Bismarck State College helps to train those folks. So if you have new employees, or if you are someone who wants to go into business for yourself and you want to go through the application process or the application training, here's a great way to do it. Starts in the new year. It's an 8-week certification or a non-credit that you can take. There's an online portion as well as an in-classroom portion. You're going to go through agronomy basics, you know, calculating fertilizer and pesticide rates. Also, you're going to look at equipment operation, laws and regulations, and then maintenance as well. When you're done, you would be able to take your commercial applicator's test, which in the state of North Dakota is it's not terrible. I mean, I've written that test in a couple hours. It's an open book test. It helps tremendously once you have years of experience, but you need to have a commercial applicator's license to operate as a commercial applicator in North Dakota. If you are a farmer doing it for yourself, you can have your private license. Those are all mandated not necessarily by the state, but by EPA's FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, Rodenticide Act. And when you have that, those applications or those licensings, you can also then buy restricted use products, etc. So all of this ties together. If this is something that's going to be part of your job, you can go through the training class. You can get the certification, have your commercial license. I still have mine. I got mine. I took a class in college that prepared me for it. And I've been asked many times, why do I have it? Because I have a whole whopping 19 acres of application under my belt. And the reality is, once you have it, you know, it's like a CDL. Well, why give it up? Mm-hmm. I still help teach some of those classes for pesticide recertification. So I don't mind getting my license back every 3 years. So it's worthwhile. But if you're looking to do that, again, that's Bismarck State College is offering it. And you certainly could email me ag@flagfamily.com. And I will send you the link where to apply. Today, as we go through the show, if you have questions, you can reach us on the Red Wing Shoe line, 701-293-9000. Happy to have folks joining us.
And we've got a special guest in waiting.
Oh, of course.
He's a familiar face.
He is. So we're going to have Greg Steeman with Starion Bank join us, our Farm Finance Insider. And we already lined up some questions for Greg, but we're always excited to get more. So when folks are sending them, whether they're through emails or calls, we will gladly take those. So feel free to join us in our discussions today. And I think there's a couple of good ones. This might take us a little while to get through some of them, so we'll see. But stay tuned. We want to touch on markets with the American Ag Network, and we'll be back. And welcome back into the studio for Weather and Ag in Focus. Joined today by Greg Steeman. He is with Starion Bank, and we do this segment called our Farm Finance Insider. So, Greg, we came in with a list of questions for today, but I feel like the one that I really want to get to first is farmland values, rising or falling in the near term, and probably going to make a difference across the U.S. You know, we've got an area up here where we had a really good sugar beet harvest. We had some areas with a good corn harvest, even though price wasn't great. We had good yield. And there are some agribusiness activities in the region that are generating some cash. So what are you seeing? What are your customers talking about?
I don't know if there you go.
Now we got them turned on.
I'd keep me turned off. when you look at all the factors that come into play, and there's not a ton of them, but commodity prices are one of them, and interest rates are the other.
Sure.
So we just, as the interest rates kind of crept up, it was during a time when commodity prices kind of kept up as well. And so I think that allowed ag real estate to hold its value, mm-hmm. you know, because there was money out there. And now what's happened is, as we've seen some, you know, commodity prices head south, at the same time, we've seen about a 75 basis point drop on funds availability. Ooh. So interest rates have taken some pressure off the high side of the interest rate. So I think right now, I don't know that we'll see a ton of volatility, but if we continue to see depressed market prices, I think that will inevitably end up impacting ag real estate.
So, okay, before we step away from that, and then I got a question just texted into me from a listener. In your banking career, have you seen corrections where we've seen that uptick and then it's come back down? How often does that happen? Is that, there's got to be a lot of factors involved to see a farmland value decrease, correct?
I think there are a lot of factors involved.
And, okay.
And I haven't necessarily seen it up until recently when we saw these, when the rising interest rate environment. But that was kind of, that impact was negated in a way by the strong commodity prices.
Okay.
You know, it's still cash available. And so I think that kind of kept the downward pressure off the ag real estate market. Now I'm curious to see if we continue to see lower prices and then interest rates level off at still what they're higher than they were historically,
you know,
for the previous decade. I can see some of those things factoring in. And especially after this year, and I think one of the questions you talked about, I'll kind of maybe segue into that. They're talking anywhere from 40 to 50% of operators.
Yes.
With a negative cash flow this year.
That is exactly the same study I've read. And that's coming out from like American Banking, CoBank, Rabo, some of the big analysts. Do you think that's the same locally, that 50%? And where does that lead us?
Well, I mean, I don't want to say uncharted territory. It's uncomfortable territory at times. But this is the reality of farming, is that there's going to be years when you have corrections and when you take a loss just because you can't control the commodity prices. And unfortunately, the inputs the inputs always lag, right? The commodity prices will drop, but the cost of the inputs, that's always a little slower to drop, unfortunately. And I think farmers kind of feel that. So I think it's a tenuous situation right now. We'll see what happens. But I think there's going to be some work that has to be done and some balance sheets.
Well, when I think about, you see that incline in farm value.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes back down, it never goes back down to the previous level, correct? So it sets that new low in the market.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And so, and you'll see, you know, it looks like an EKG at times. you like to see it smooth and predictable, but it's not always that's not always the case. So I think it's really a year-by-year situation. And I think right now we're going to see some people who are maybe hesitant on making some of those big purchases, whether it comes to, you know, ag real estate or machinery or things along those lines, because I think they're going to have to prioritize what they're going to do. And if they have to do some, you know, put some debt on some, you know, intermediate or long-term assets, those are discussions that will have to take place.
And Greg, we've got a new administration coming in January, and they're already talking about tariffs on Mexico and Canada. And how will that affect the farming community?
people don't know. I mean, there's a lot of predictions out there, but you don't necessarily know. I mean, well first of all, we're dealing with a president who we've experienced his administration prior.
Right.
And I think, you know, some of those tariffs caused some depressed egg commodity prices. What was interesting is I didn't hear a lot of, I mean, there was some frustration. I didn't hear nearly as much frustration as you think you might when it had kind of that. And I think in that ag world, some people thought some things need to be reset and some things need to be addressed. And I don't know that the long-term effect was overly negative. So, and he is talking about doing it again, and we'll see what happens. And sometimes people just sit and wait and wait it out to see what kind of an impact it has on both countries that are involved economically.
Well, I think there's two things. One, yes, there is a discussion about day one, we're slapping tariffs on Canada and Mexico, and what's that going to do to fertilizer, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Hold the phone. We're not to day one yet. A lot can change in the next 60 days. Additionally, I've never seen a politician come into office and pull off every one of their campaign promises, if you will. And I think that just like last time, yeah, did we lose money? Did we lose market with Trump to China? We did. Was that made up for by the government? Not entirely, but a good chunk was. And to be honest, I just have a feeling that you better be real close and tight with your marketer right now, with your grain merchandisers and marketers right now. They're going to watch those incremental moves and really jump on them when the time is right.
I don't disagree with that. And going back to your point, saber rattling always, you know.
Sure.
It's commonplace.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not necessarily the threat of what they're saying. It's the threat of discussing it is that we'll move markets at
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
And so I'm with you on that. And I think people are going to want to, you know, manage profit taking as best they can. Like you said, maintain close relationship with your marketers. I think those things all matter. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what shakes out. You know, and will it be necessary? Sometimes the threat of something forces the conversation to happen before the action ever takes place.
Of course, it does.
Yeah. And that's what. And typically, that's the value they're looking to get right now.
That's already happened in some cases, mm-hmm. by the way. Okay, so this is a listener question. Is there any involvement of crypto in ag business or finance? And any thoughts on that as a banker?
Thank you for the question. I am not any type of an expert with crypto. Now, that does not mean it's not involved. I don't deal with it.
Okay.
And to a certain level, I don't think our institution does. I don't mean to speak for our entire institution because I am visited with every single banker. But I will tell you, I'm not familiar with it. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on it.
Okay. Well, and I would say I don't hear it commonplace, but man, is there a discussion about that? Because there are some mm-hmm. farmers who have said, okay, if you're going to pay me my dividend or my rebate check or whatever it is and what program I'm in, pay it to me in crypto. Some would like to see that.
I believe it. And what I do think exists right now is extremely varying levels of understanding
yeah.
of it. And my whole thought process is until I believe I have a firm grasp of it,
uh-huh.
I'm not going to, it's the old, you know, I have enough information to be dangerous.
Sure.
I don't want to be that type of person when it comes to crypto, especially in the banking side of things.
Well, once you learn more, could you just kindly teach me? Because I got zero.
Yeah,
over
there
here.
You are. There you are.
Well, no. And it's gaining traction over the last, you know,
but there also,
5 to 10 years.
There's some folks that bought crypto in about 2019 and then sort of forgot about it. And all of a sudden saw really big returns this last year, in the last 30 days.
Hmm.
So it can matter.
Oh, definitely, without question.
Do you put that on your balance sheet?
When
I come in to talk to you about my operating loan, what do I have to tell you, Greg?
That's interesting. It depends on how heavily leveraged you are, I suppose, and where you're at with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does it have value? It certainly does.
Yeah.
You know, it's somewhat volatile, but at the same time, it does have value, and there's real money invested in it. So my guess is you probably could. You know, I don't know. I don't know that we would use it as collateral.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So one more question that we've had poised for today. Recreational hemp is legal in Minnesota. North Dakota and South Dakota haven't gotten there. And I know that there's always been talk around hemp being a cash business, that type of thing. So let's say I'm farming and I want to raise hemp as a cultivated crop for recreational marijuana, which, by the way, I'm having a lot of trouble getting anybody who wants to talk about how to do that on radio. So, but if I were, how do I do that with you? As a, can, is it something that we could actually do a bank loan on?
Well, it's a great question. And
you're going to get it eventually, right?
Yeah. And I did from you. And to, you know, and to the point, I love our state. I called the Commissioner of Financial Institutions, or I emailed Lisa Cruz, the Commissioner of Financial Institutions.
Oh, get the big guns.
And but that's anybody can do that in this state. And that's what's great about it. And about 20 minutes later, my phone's ringing, and it's, you know, from the Capitol. And that's North Dakota, right? Mm-hmm. Accessible leaders. I'm grateful for that. And she said it's an interesting question because, you know, technically, federally, it's still, you know, the marijuana, it's federal law will supersede local law.
Right.
And it's technically illegal at the federal level, even though it will is approved for production. Hemp, when it's stored at a certain temperature, they say the values mm-hmm. or the levels, certain levels will vary.
Yep. The THC levels.
Yeah. And so what you end up with is it depends on the institution, to be quite honest with you. Number one, going back to what we were kind of joking about with crypto, we're not going to use it for security for a loan.
Yeah.
If you were trying to work with somebody, that would probably be the first thing is, hey, we're not going to even value your crop.
Sure.
We're going to use something else to secure a loan, though. Even though we you know, you've shown that you can generate a profit by selling this product,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, you get into the safe banking rules. And I believe both Cramer and Hoven are working at the federal. I think there's a fair amount of work happening at the federal level because of the production.
Yeah.
You know, that's been approved, whether it's recreational, uh-huh. Marijuana or hemp, whatever it might be. It's probably not going to go the other direction. It's only going to expand. So there are some banking issues to it.
Sure.
And that was what Lisa was kind enough to share some of that information is that, you know, the hemp is obviously legal. But as far as levels, how it can be used, things like that, banks have to be careful when it comes to what type of projects they're financing.
Well, when you said it's not legal at a federal level, does that factor in when we talk about things being FDIC insured?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Oh.
When you look at federally, you know, FDIC insurance, and that's how that impacts the banking world, and then you're dealing with, you know, different states applying different statutes when it comes to marijuana, things along those lines. It's just it's an easier line to stay on one side of if you're a financial institution. Put it that way.
To get this right, my farmland's going to be higher valued when I take out a loan in crypto to raise my marijuana.
I hope you have a lot of cash on hand.
Put it this way. Sounds like a locked facility if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, that's right.
Good try, though, Bridget.
Well, yeah. I just want to put all the pieces together.
Right?
You cannot play the game if you don't know all the rules.
That's right.
Okay. Greg, thank you. And just any last advice to your depositors, your farmer operators who are coming in right now getting ready for end of year?
Well, I think it goes back to what you said. Stay in close touch. You know, we've kind of, I don't want to say joking, we've addressed like your producers can kind of have a board of directors at times, whether it's your tax accountant, whether it's your attorney, whether it's, you know, your marketer, whoever it is. I just think maintain those conversations. Stay, and because profitability is, it's a thin margin. You know, it's a, you know, on way or the other. And profitability matters and timing matters and having timely conversations all have great value.
Oh, man. Okay. So that is going to be very, very helpful. We'll have a whole long list for you again in December when you come back.
Look forward to it. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Greg.
Well.
You too.
Thank you, Greg. Okay. Bottom of the hour news. We're a little bit late, but we're going to do that. Okay. So we'll be back.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus, 1:39 in the afternoon on this Tuesday, November 26th. It's a cold one out there with temperatures right around 15 degrees across much of the area. A lot of clouds. There's still a few flurries out there. No big snows in the forecast, at least for our area. So that's good news if you have any holiday travel locally. We're looking at a little light snow coming in tonight into tomorrow morning. Could pick up a half inch or so out of that. So it's just enough to kind of grease the roadways up for tomorrow morning's commute. But other than that, just windy conditions and cold weather for Thanksgiving through the weekend with highs 10 to 15 above. Nighttime lows 0 to 5 below, wind chills at times 10 to 20 below. So make sure the winter weather survival kit is packed in that vehicle. If your car breaks down, you don't want to be caught out there in those nasty wind chills for sure. And no big storms in sight. Now, if you're doing any traveling across the lower 48, there is going to be some snow in the Rockies today and tomorrow. For today, Salt Lake, and that's spreading currently into Colorado. That system will move to our south, down into the southern plains, and zip up the east coast. And it's going to give quite a bit of snow to the northeastern part of the U.S. So if you have any travel plans going into the northeast, your travel could be affected there. Interior New England, mainly. I think the coastal cities, New York, Philly, D.C., those areas should be okay. The main hubs, Chicago, L.A., New York should be okay. Minneapolis should be okay. Not many delays due to weather. So that's good news. Denver might have some delays, and then some of those interior cities of the Northeast. But, hey, that's not that bad. I mean, Thanksgiving, you know, we could be dealing with some big storms this time of the year.
We have.
Affecting travel, and this year is not going to be that case, so that's good.
So thank to those who are out on the road, folks like Trucker Al, who's a regular listener, thanks, Al. He dropped off a calendar and a Leadstone catalog for me. Leadstone is an animal veterinarian supply.
Excellent.
So thank you for that, Al. I appreciate it.
He's always thinking of us.
He really does. And then also, to those who are looking, students who are going to be on break over Thanksgiving, don't forget to get me your applications for the Weather and Ag and Focus Assistant Ag Director. I am looking for, I need like 12 students. I need one every month. Somebody new to come in. I'll work with you on the days that you can be here when you're not in class. And I am looking for high school into college. Kids who can come in and do what we do for a day. Give you the test run of talking about headlines and interviewing guests and so much more. So looking forward to those.
That's a great experience.
I hope so.
You know, and my mom and dad always told me that any chance you can get for an internship when you're still in high school, you take full advantage of that. Because any experience you can get under your belt before you get out of school, that's bonus.
When I was hiring interns and trainees in my past career, I often said, you have to find out what you like and what you don't like. And here's a great way to test drive
that. That's perfect, no doubt.
Yep, learn more.
No doubt.
So, and there's plenty of things going on in, you know, what's happening farming-wise at the moment. One of those is the fact that tomatoes have actually become a great research crop. Maybe not the one you were thinking of, but yes, tomatoes. The reason is tomatoes have something called thermotolerance. It's the ability of the plant to withstand extreme weather conditions. So scientists are studying that molecular and cellular level of a tomato plant. That way they can use it and apply it to other crops biologically so they can figure out how to reduce temperature stress without affecting the flavors or its growing patterns, the way people experience a tomato, the way they call it. So, you know, if you want your juicy tomato, if you're heavy, meaty ones, that type of thing. So really it's looking for ways to do different, and tomatoes are a good way to do it.
And good for you too. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I know, Bridget, we...
Excuse me.
That's okay.
I'm the coffee sneezy right? show over here today.
So we had talked briefly off air, and I brought it up briefly to Greg, too. So let's assume that we get these tariffs put on for Mexico and Canada. And this could really affect, you said, in terms of farming, this could eventually affect the price of goods. How is that?
Okay, so when you think about a lot of our fertilizer that comes in out of Canada, as well as Russia, and when we put tariffs on, that increases that cost to the farmer, so that increases your input cost, which eventually is going to trickle down to us at the consumer level. So will we see effects from tariffs? Of course we will. But just like Greg was talking about earlier, we don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet. I know this sounds silly. You know, Trump's going to take his administration in on January 20th. That's a long way away.
It is.
That's a lot of stuff
now,
that can happen.
Now, can we produce some of that fertilizer here in the U.S. instead of importing
it? It's not production, it's mined. So if you don't have a mine, you're not going to be able
to
find
it. All right.
And it's been really cool. I have toured some of those mines, like up at Esterhazy. And when you go down, so I was in a potash mine. And when you go down below ground, probably about a half mile, and then you drive out underground 4 or 5 miles, and then you're in like these little Jeep things, and you ride out there, and the mining machines look like giant bear claws that just turn, and they grind away, and then they have an overhead conveyor that lifts that material up and takes it back to the main shaft where it gets taken up to the ground level and then gets processed. But when you're driving out in these little cars, they will stop you. And they'll say, okay, it gets a little dark down here. and they turn off the lights on the little Jeep. And that is the blackness where you can't see your hand in front of your face. It is amazing. It is wild.
Interesting.
And you are that far out underground.
How far underground are you?
A half mile. We were about a half mile, three quarters of a mile down. And then we drove out 4 or 5 miles underground to the mining site where they were currently pulling material. It was cool.
Interesting.
I did that with a whole busload of farmers. We took off. We did it 2 or 3 years in a row. Took off and went up to Esterhazy. And spent the night, had, you know, supper, and then the next morning we would tour the mine.
So if you're claustrophobic, it's probably not the place to be.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, because you're in a very wide, like, alleyway. You know, it's probably 3 dump trucks wide.
Okay.
It's not very tall, right, because everything's running on overhead conveyor, and you're sitting in the back of a Jeep, but it's dark. It's real dark. And it's warm. And when you come out, because you're in a potash mine, you come out, you just feel salty, because that's really what it is. So when you would like touch your face, you could feel the grit of the salt, or it'd be on your lips if you licked your lips. Yeah, it was really cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I can say I've been that far underground.
Hmm.
Wasn't hell, but it probably close.
That might be a little deeper, right?
Who knows? Grandma always said I was working my way towards. So didn't say she was wrong.
Oh, man.
Okay, so also, you know, we've gotten snow out in the western part of the North Dakota, but we do realize that there is cover crop that has to be seeded, because we know that with the wildfires that went through, we burned off so much of that plant material. There is something that's called dormant seeding. If you haven't had a chance yet, and if they could have gotten into it before the ground froze, you could actually have dormant seeded, put the seed in the ground, and then just waited for moisture to come around, like in the spring. I don't know how much of that got done, but there are several programs that are trying to encourage the amount of cover crop that we use. In fact, even by the year 2030, most organizations that promote cover crop are looking to almost double the acreage that they have. And that's just a way to prevent more erosion as well, because without any ground cover, we're going to probably, in high winds in the spring, we will likely see quite a bit of dirt moving.
Yeah,
at that point, sorry, Sarah, it's not soil. It's dirt when it's in the air like that.
And boy, we still need a lot of precip out west. And boy, there's just not a lot in the forecast out there. There's some, but I mean, they came into this fall with extreme drought in the far western part of the state into eastern Montana. And I honestly don't see that changing a whole lot over the winter. Hopefully, as the storm track lifts north during the spring, that some of those active storms that were to our south will affect areas in that third and fourth cycle out in the western part of the state, or it's going to be a long summer next year.
We're going to hope for the best. Yeah. Just remember, not the first time we've had severe drought in this state.
Yep, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll hit on a few ag topics. We'll recap the weather quick for you. Also, don't forget, tomorrow, mark it on your calendar, 2 p.m., right after Weather and Ag, we'll have the LRC Winter Weather Outlook on the Jay Thomas Show. You don't want to miss that. We'll have Gary Lezak on, and I'm sure he'll be answering plenty of questions. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hey, and welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:53 in the afternoon. I want to thank everybody for joining us again on this cold, cloudy day. A few flurries out there, temperatures in the mid-teens, and not going to move much for the rest of the afternoon. But as we said earlier, if you have any travel plans, weather looks pretty decent around the northern plains. There will be a little light snow late tonight into tomorrow morning, stretching from the north central part of the state down through the valley and into parts of Minnesota. But again, it inch or less, so we're not looking at a lot, but enough just to kind of slicken things up just a touch. So keep that in mind. If you're going to be out and about tomorrow morning, the rest of the holiday weekend looks just dry and cold. And windy. Yuck.
That's not going to change anytime real soon.
No, it's not. Not anytime soon, but there are some signs that as we start December, we will start to warm up just a bit. So at least we'll get out of the deep, deep freeze and start to modify things a touch.
Absolutely. It'll get better. We're going to be fine. Like you said, there'll be a little bit of a warm up coming soon.
Yep.
So one of the things that, you know, we talk about what's happening administratively with new administrations coming on. Well, there is a U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement that Trump put in back in, I think, 2018. And part of that had to do with some water retention on the Rio Grande River in the Rio Bravo area. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of a, like, water storage. Like, Mexico got to use a bunch of water, but they had to release some to us so that Texas farmers could be using it for irrigation and so forth. And Mexico was way behind in releasing water to us. funny, Trump won, and all of a sudden they got their water in Texas. So that was there's a lot less concern all of a sudden with water in that region.
That's a good thing.
There was at a deficit. They were waiting for some storms to go ahead and come through. But it sounds like, from what I read in a headline just earlier today, that all of a sudden that water came.
That's a good thing.
It's a miracle.
Yes.
Just a miracle.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, we could call it that. So, and then, you know, one other headline that we've noticed as of late, heart disease is rising in the rural areas, or at least it looks that way on paper. And I know that maybe sounds a little crazy, but, you know, post-COVID especially, a lot of folks just, they didn't take the time to go to the doctor, especially if you were farming. You didn't have the time. Telemed has helped, but there are some things you just cannot diagnose over the phone. And in the 18 to 65 year old category, which is essentially everybody, heart disease is on the rise by about 9% in more rural areas. Can also be contributed to stress. a lack of doctors.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have someone locally that you can go see and you have to drive several hours to get health care, you're not going to do it as often. Mm-hmm. Stress certainly is a factor. And we continue to see that rise. So realistically, I think that's one of, if you look at obesity, diabetes, and heart disease, they are three main concerns for rural areas across the U.S. right now, and growing concerns. No pun intended to that.
So what would be how do we alleviate that? I mean,
we need more doctors. We need more population to be doctors. We need to be willing to have doctors come in from out of country who are willing to go to the rural areas and work.
Okay.
And some of them are going to be a lot harder to get to. Look at what's happened post Hurricane Helene damage on the coastal states. Mm-hmm. You know, you might want to be a doctor and practice there, but you don't have a building to put it in. So that changes. And just the cost of healthcare has really become exorbitant for so many folks. You know, we talked about that with our guest on Friday.
Yep.
And how difficult that can be for folks to try to maintain what they're doing.
Hmm.
So there's a lot to factor into healthcare and so much more that's happening around the world right now. You know, post hurricane, boy, the numbers have started to roll in on Hurricane Helene. What's happening out there? Just looking at the state of Tennessee, they're looking at their direct and indirect losses that are anywhere from $300 million to $1.2 billion. That's a really big swing. They're talking crops, inventory, revenue losses, and then a multiplier effect as it would recirculate through the local economies. But it's easy to see that just agriculturally, losses are in about that 700, probably 800 to 800 million to $1 billion in just ag.
And this was Tennessee?
Tennessee.
From Hurricane Helene?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Because you look at, there's 9 East Tennessee counties that were strongly affected. They include about 7,700 crop and livestock farms. That granted, they're significantly smaller than what we would look for as acreage up here. It also destroyed 1.8 million acres of forest. There was some pasture. There's pasture land in these counties that were affected. There's pasture, corn, soybeans, and a lot of other crop. And also in that area, when you look at the livestock production, a lot of poultry was focused in that neighborhood. And that was affected. Barns without power.
Right.
That's not good for chickens.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt.
Yes.
No doubt. Well, that'll do it for us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't forget, tomorrow will be our our LRC, Winter Weather Outlook, on the Jay Thomas Show, which is coming up next. So again, for Bridget and myself, want to thank everybody for joining us. Stay tuned for the Jay Thomas Show.